to the Power Hour on Verb Moto.
Sunday, Sunday, Sunday. Prepare to get annihilated with an awesome opportunity. Featuring your favorite motocross brand, Verb Moto. Win a grand prize of a Yamaha Wolverine R-Max 2 1000 Sport. Two 2024 Yamaha TTR 110E motorcycles. And $20,000 cash. But wait, there's more. There's also additional weekly prizes. New merch, pocket-breaking prizes, our pockets, definitely not your pockets. The more you buy, the more points you earn. We're stacking points, baby. Come get them. Visit shopverb.com for more or dial 1-800-VERB-MOTO. That's not a real number. Don't call us, please. No purchase necessary. Rules and regulations apply. See shopverb.com for official rules.
You're a tiny delay. And this is the Verb Pod Network. This is the Power Hour. I'm your host, Brad Gebhardt. You probably just listened to an advertisement for the Verb Moto Dream Stakes. If I did my job, and I'm pretty sure I did do my job because I have a new intro with that advertisement embedded into it. So thank you for listening to that. Hopefully you're stoked about the Dream Stakes. I'm not going to give you a lot of more information that you already heard, but I will introduce my co-host, the guy with all of the real knowledge on this podcast. He's why he's on here in general, and he's way better looking than I am. Zach Heron, welcome to the Power Hour.
I don't know about knowledge, man, but we're faking it till we make it. That's for sure. And, man, you talk about stoke. Like you said, the Dream Stakes underway, and we are, what, just about 2 weeks away, maybe a little over 2 weeks away from World Mini, baby. I am stoked, beyond excited. Going to have the legend Kevin Kelly up in the tower with me. I mean, if I'm struggling, that's who I need beside me to take notes from. Had a great time announced with him at Loretta's last year. So you've got an A-team up in the tower, and we've got an A-team as far as competition, and then the absolute pinnacle as far as tracks go. Mesquite MX, it doesn't get any better. Ken Roczen hanging out there training. Like you said, I believe, didn't you say Faulkner grew up racing out there as well in that series?
Marchbanks, actually. Marchbanks,
that was it.
You have Pierce Brown as well as, in fact, a lot of people think Cade Johnson is a Texas boy who's actually born and raised in Utah and moved down there throughout his sort of formative years. And then, you also have guys like Chunk himself, Chance Hymus, cut his teeth while racing. Same thing with Jace Allred. That's where he calls home. You'll see him leading a lot of laps in the A-class. And then Grayson Townsend, the Fast Company rider himself. He's a Team Green kid. Moved up to the 250B class this last year, about maybe 6 months ago. And, I watched him win his very first 250B championship. And I think it's going to be a lot of great racing. You've got Billy McLaughlin coming out there. I think tons of kids. You'll have Owen Koval and a bunch of others. Just tons of talent. And it's World Mini. It's coming back. And it's being as prevalent as it's ever been. So I'm looking forward to it. It's going to be a lot of fun. I'll be watching from afar, but I'll be encouraging you to, get all nice and cozy with one Kevin Kelly. The two of you guys are going to be two peas in a pod.
Absolutely, man. It's going to be a great time. I'll be sending the snaps. And you've mentioned Team Green Kawasaki contingency out there as well. Now, it's an MXGP format, but all my fellow Team Green riders, make sure you've got everything straightened up so you can get your contingency.
That's right.
And that's just the start, Brad. I mean, you know just as well as I do, the Verb Shred Tour, it just keeps on keeping on. We got Verbadilla in May. All right. Throwing it back to my man JJ at J-Day. Actually, just saw my man Ethan from the J-Day series a couple weeks ago out in Florida. He's getting ready to get things kicked off up in the Northeast. And can't wait to go back out. Oh, man, just awesome. A little bit of moto, a little bit of off-road. Chris Canning taking the win the last time we were out at Verbadilla. How many opportunities did you get?
Gavin Guegua.
Do not cross the track, or I will walk down there. Now, unfortunately, JJ not going to be joining us this year. He is peace on the retirement. Exactly, man. He is enjoying it, sipping margaritas, watching the sunset. I don't blame him, but we are going to be calling the action over there from, I'm calling it Screw You. That's what I was told it was called. It's Screw You to me. And of course, we got the Sky Shot as well. We got Surons. We got, I think we've got an entire truckload of batteries coming as well, just so we can still run out by noon and be told that we're not charging them fast enough. So that one's going to be fantastic. That is May 18th and 19th out at Una Effendilla, baby, New Berlin, New York. And then flash forward down to June. Same thing, 15th, 16th out at Washougal. Number one on my checklist for national tracks to go see, but probably not going to be able to make the flight this year. But I do know that if you're one of these Pit Bike of Nations contestants, if you're a mini moto fanatic, we have the Pit Bike Straight Rhythm, arguably the biggest pit bike hit of the year last year. It's back. It's not bigger. It's the same size, but it's better than ever. No turns, jumps for days. I did not realize that you could scrub a 110 so intensely until I saw the footage from that last year. So going to be an awesome time, man.
Scrub a big bike. I don't know how someone can like have the wherewithal, the body English to scrub.
The math ain't mathing, man. It doesn't make sense. And those things are hopped up. And I mean, everything from CR50s up to, you know, the TTR 125. So a good time for everybody out there. And that's what I mean. That's what it is all about. The Verb Shred Tour is good times and dirt bikes, baby. What more do you need?
Absolutely. And you just get touching on the pit bikes for just a second here. We had the Gypsy 50 at the Gypsy 500. That was the entertainment for the Friday night. And there was one guy out there, I think he was from Faster Minis, who had a like a basically like a CRF X 125. I don't necessarily know that like, is that still a pit bike when it has like an 18 inch rear wheel and like basically is still a full size bike, but like also air cooled and like, It was a lot. I think it has a larger stance than even like a CR150. Would they even sell that bike anymore?
Maybe not. He might have just framed it and then built it up from the ground. But yeah, I don't know. There's got to be some kind of legislation in place and some kind of differing rules depending on the size. But and honestly, I think that's half the fun too, though, man. Some people, I can't help but think about Rob Bidas back in the day talking about tricking out some pit bikes and doing it right. So it's always fun to see the different styles. Sometimes it's a rather laughable what people come up with, putting, you know, mismatched parts and duct tape and mailbox numbers and everything else. And then sometimes you're like, that thing looks like a factory machine right there. And that's at your pit bike. I can't imagine what your race bike looks like. But nonetheless, it's good times, man. Everybody gets a little more confident on smaller bikes. Not that they should, but it makes it rather entertaining for the fans and for the announcers calling the action as well. So can't wait, man. We've got a ton of great stuff going on. That's just a little bit of what you've got to expect in 2024 for that Verb Moto Shred Tour.
Heck yeah. So let's get to some quick banter here. You are the voice of GNCC. Colin, whether it's quads, mini bikes, and those pro classes, the XC1, the XC2, you've been sight on scene for all of those races. All of them have had some sort of moisture, in the soil and in the air. Take me through it a little bit. I'm not super up on all things in the woods and what have you. And that's really why you're on the show, aside from, moto knowledge and looking good. Tell me a little bit about the GNCC series. How's my guy Stu doing?
Man, things are wild right now. A little bit of a different story compared to last year's season. For those of you that maybe weren't as up to date, like our good friend Brad here, last year, first seven rounds of GNCC, we had seven different winners in our premier class. Now, we touched on this on the last episode, a little different in the woods. 450s, your XC1 class, 250s, your XC2 class, as well as your 125s, which is the XC3 class. They're all out on track at the same time. Okay, we've got a multitude of classes out there at one time, but we really focus on those pros, the XC1, XC2, and then we touch on the XC3 on the podiums as well. But, man, just a wild race season going on right now. Johnny Girard in that Red Bull FMF KTM team, he's shut everybody down right now. Like you said, we've had some different conditions. We actually had some dust this previous weekend after a little bit of rain on Friday. Here's what you got to understand, Brad. You've got thousands of riders, two-wheeled and four-wheeled, making lap after lap around that track. What looks like muddy, there's standing water on lap one. I have seen it. 3 hours later, there is dust flying in the exact same spot, just because of how many motorcycles are going over it. So we actually had an extremely great weekend as far as weather conditions go. Things were wild on the four-wheeler side of things. Bryson Neal, the man to beat right now. He's 4-for-4 on the season. Got his first hole shot of the season as well. So checked out. Said deuces. I'll see you guys at the finish. So that one, it basically just comes down to who's willing to beat the reigning champ. The number one of Bryson Neal is just handling business. We drop a couple of wheels, head over to the two-wheel side of things, and it was the fill-in rider on Red Bull KTM, Dante Oliveira. He's coming from California, does some of the work series, some of those things over there.
He raced Delco National last year.
Yeah, man. And I mean, that's what this guy has got it figured out. Put him on the track, put him on the trail. He knows how to twist the throttle. Races a 450 over in the West Coast side of things. But, fun fact, actually found out both of those KTM riders doing the 350 in the XC1 class here at the GNCC series. So they were running 1-2. And
that's going to be a great weapon for the Woods.
Oh, man, absolutely. We actually had the injured Ben Kelly, who was on Red Bull KTM, in the booth with us, giving some great insight. Really cool to hear his perspective as to the way the teammates were riding. Obviously, 3 hours, man, it's a whole different ballgame. The mind games come into it, their strategy. You actually see riders giving positions away, saying, hey, I'm going to try to follow you for a lap, which is about 40 minutes or so. I'm going to just follow you for a lap, check your lines out, and then see if maybe I can drop the hammer after 2 hours of racing. Now, you talked about our boy, Motley Stu, Stubby-Doo, Stu Baylor himself. Man, did not make it easy on himself, almost dead last coming into the Woods in his class. But, you know, we always say, if something's not ripped, if something's not torn on Stu Baylor, he's not racing. Sure enough, chest protector strap comes undone. It's flapping in the wind. He clips a tree. Tree's not going to make it. And the jersey's ripped. All of a sudden, he drops about 20 seconds in what was a 50-second lead. He's pushing. We thought it was going to make it. I mean, if we had one more lap, I guarantee he would have been in the battle for the lead. So he comes across the line in third place. Now, here's where the drama comes in. Unfortunately, there's rule in GNCC. You have the marked trail, and riders are allowed 25 feet on either side of the trail to go make passes. And we have officials and spectators watching throughout the race.
You broke the rules.
Apparently, Stu, you know, and imagine that you're in the middle of a race for 3 hours. You're going as fast as you possibly can. And you're also trying to judge exactly what 25 feet is from a marked trail. Not easy to do. I have been told round about 28 feet was the line that Stu took. So 3 feet past, you know, 3 feet too far.
1 yard.
And yep. And unfortunately, Stu was informed at the end of the race that he was going to be docked one position due to that infraction. So it was actually his brother, Grant Baylor, who would get the final podium spot. Bittersweet moment for Grant, even talking to him on the podium. I definitely don't think he minds, you know, picking up the podium bonus. He was about half naked back at the truck before we got him up to the podium. He didn't even know he'd got it. But you could definitely hear the disappointment in his voice. Stu, obviously a fan favorite and good friends with a lot of the riders, and they were disappointed with that. So, Stu, a little bit of drama involved in this last one, but talked to Jade earlier today. They're putting the head down, and there's one person you don't want pissed off coming into a race weekend. It's Stu, and that's exactly what he is. We got a 2-week break for him to marinate in it, really soak it all in, and then go into a brand new facility out in Tennessee, man. I'm really excited for that. The Landers facility, going to be a great time, and man, they're going to come out swinging there for round 5.
Absolutely. You know, how many rounds is the series? Is it 10, 11 rounds? 10 rounds?
13 this year. So we had 12 last year, a little bit of a shorter season, but we've got, we've got 13 this year. We have, 2 weeks from here, right after I get back from sunny Vegas over at World Mini, we'll be in Tennessee. And then 2 weeks after that, we will be at Snowshoe in West Virginia. And then a little bit different compared to the motocross side of things. We actually take a summer break. And so they won't be doing any racing through the back part of June throughout July. And then they will kick off about 2 or 3 weeks after the Loretta Lynn's Amateur National. And they'll have those final four rounds.
Prior to hitting record on this thing, you let me know that you'll be performing at Snowshoe as well. Not just on the microphone, but also playing some of your original tunes. For those who don't know, Zach is a recording artist to the stars.
Man of many microphones, that is for sure. So we are going to be chatting it up all day long, hanging out at Howard's Hole after my neck in mud and beer and everything else that swirls around down there, calling the four-wheel and race in action. And then, Snowshoe, if there's one race on the calendar that you want to circle, it's Snowshoe for me. It's just a great facility, the Snowshoe Ski Resort. You're almost – the whole track is surrounded by this little ski town. You've got the lifts you can actually go over as the riders are racing. Beautiful scenery. The riders actually start on the road going through the town. Like, we don't have – on the grass field. Like, it's so cool. The whole place shuts down and is 100% GNCC for the entire weekend. And then, like you said, we've got the – we call it the Meet, the Monster Energy Activation Transport. DJ Judd does his thing, pulls it up into the pavilion. You've got three stories of hotel rooms. Everybody's out on their balcony. And both Friday and Saturday, we're going to be playing some tunes, having a good time, trying not to get too rowdy. But don't tell Tim Cotter we're getting rowdy, baby. I'm going wall in. We got all the hits planned. So it's going to be a good time, man. The race and just the tip of the iceberg for Snowshoe.
Personally, my favorite thing about watching you perform, and I had the fortunate of watching you perform this last year at the Shoals for that was for New Year's, is watching you try and keep it together after like 8-10 songs in, when like the dance floor is finally livened up and people are just feeding you waters and all kinds of other
hydrating,
lots of beverages. Hydration.
Yes.
And the eyes get a little wild and you start to forget what song you're on.
Start forgetting, start confusing lyrics. But the best part is by that point, nobody notices. So we're all good, man.
You repeated a verse of Rockstar by
The Nickelback, absolutely.
Is a good band. Yeah, they didn't throw anybody off. They're like, no, he's just going back.
He really liked that one.
He
didn't say it right the first time. No, it's a good time, and that's what I mean. I had the privilege of being out there last year, wanted to play some music, but just wasn't able to get it scheduled in on time. But it's literally like 1,000+ people just hanging out in the pavilion, all with the same love of racing. The riders come out.
Most of them will be familiar with you anyway.
Well, exactly. A lot of them are going to know me. A little nervous, if I'm going to be honest, man. Talk about not wanting to screw the pooch on this one. But nonetheless, I'm excited, man. I'm already working on the song lineups. Got 2 nights of it, so gotta keep it escalating, man. Gotta finish with a strong one on the end of Saturday night. So I'm very excited. And, of course, we're going to have some incredible racing as well. Snowshoe, always one of the most technical courses on the circuit. So, here in just a couple of months, we'll be hanging out, doing our thing up in West Virginia.
That's awesome, dude. Glad to hear it. So it's time for the Racetech Suspension and Engines Block Pass. So this is right in the middle of this podcast. Racetech comes screaming in, blocks you out, and takes off for the victory. And my question for you, Zach Barron, is have you ever tried Racetech Gold Bells?
I have not, and it's funny that you mentioned that. I had a friend of mine, if you guys follow me on Instagram, @ZachHeron16, put together, shameless, absolutely. And I think I've made my first Insta banger. Got some clips of me riding last week out at the Ridge MX. And there was a friend of mine, a rider, real fast, but always kind of been a little behind the eight ball as far as equipment goes. He got his suspension done by Racetech. And man, I mean, at some point people start to sound like almost like they're exaggerating, right? Where they're like, oh my God, this thing is so good, man. You don't understand. I'm telling you what, I've seen this guy ride for a long time. We've grown up together, and it's maybe been 2 months since I've seen him ride last. Now, you can improve a lot over 2 months, but this guy, he just had a whole different flow and style about him, man. Like he's always been talking about the way he's wanted to be able to charge into the corners, and he gets these kicks from his old suspension. And man, he's loved everything to do with Racetech. I guess you would probably know the personnel, but he said their communication back and forth has been phenomenal. And so no, to answer your question, I have not had the ability to try them yet, but anybody that I have talked to that has had anything to do with Racetech, nothing but positive things to say.
Well, we're going to have to get you set up. I'm sure that there's a Racetech service center somewhat near you.
Gotta be.
We'll get maybe some condition one cases sent over so you can send your stuff out, and just get the whole process going, because Racetech Gold Valves is not only going to help with your bottoming resistance, but it's also going to help with plushness as well. I personally have that on my KTM. I've had it on my Kawasaki as well. And, now, I think I'm going to do a spring conversion kit with my 2023 Air Forks, and have that stuff redone by my friends over at Racetech. I really like the way it felt after trying it. And the thing is like, for me, I only ride probably like 3 or 4 tracks close to where I'm at. So I know exactly how the bike normally feels at certain tracks and sort of what the feedback that I get, especially because I've had the current KTM that I've been racing since 2016. So like, I know a bump is how
that you've got it pretty much set up now.
Right. So, I got my stuff done by Racetech in, I guess that was July of last year. And I couldn't believe just how much more confident I was coming into corners, how much more I could trust the front end. And I'm not saying that that's going to be the exact same experience for everybody, but I saw a huge, improvement in just my overall comfortability. And you would agree that when you're comfortable, then you feel like you can go a little faster. You can push the pace a little bit. And you're just going to get a little bit more out of your weekend warrior time, just riding and getting that throttle therapy. Cause like, hey, riding's awesome, but if we could make it a little bit more awesome, isn't that worth the investment?
Absolutely. And I mean, even just talking about my friend there, he's an A-class rider, right? He's pretty fast, very, very skilled on a motorcycle, but
like
you said, exactly, completely different from me. But if you think about it, this is for the weekend warrior. You said it right there. Comfort equals confidence. And for your riders
and
that aren't, Yeah, exactly. And your riders that aren't out there every weekend, you know, I got to ride with my dad this past weekend as well. And, you know, he's approaching 60 years old, still out there ripping it up, having a good time. But for any vet rider at this point, man, this is a hard sport. It's hard on the body. It's obviously got some extreme consequences. And so anything that you can do to make yourself a little more comfortable and a little more willing to say, hey, I want to go out, I want to get on my motorcycle and I want to keep riding. Like you said, I think it's a worthy investment for me. So definitely worth checking out. And like I said, just heard nothing but good things about the way Racetech treats their customers as well. Because a good product is one thing, but a good company that truly understands what you're wanting to do and how to help you is a whole nother ballgame.
Certainly. Their communication has been awesome. And they've also been nice enough to hook us up with some Gold Valve kits, which I do have to hit back with Chris Riesenberg over at Racetech, because I'm officially out of things to send out. So yeah, I gotta get re-upped on that. I'm sure he'll have no problem setting me up with some more vouchers for Gold Valve kits and send that out to some loyal listeners. Now it's time for the Verb Thought Line. You could submit any of your questions. This is where Zach and I, we like just lay it on us. You got a question? We might have an answer. If we don't know the answer, we'll look it up or we'll make something up. Either way, yeah, you can submit your questions to @VerbMoto on Twitter with #VerbLine, or you can just email me directly, Brad@VerbMoto.com. Appreciate everybody for doing that, especially Jack Blueberg out of St. Louis, Missouri. My girlfriend thought it was misery, which kind of actually makes some sense, especially in the middle of the dead of winter. I think there's some people who would definitely,
who would agree with that.
Maybe that's how they're going to say it from now on. But he's straight out of Misery, and yeah, that's where we're going for Supercross this weekend. So hopefully, Jack, you've got some tickets. I don't have anything to hook you up with, but either way, appreciate the email. The question is, Jack says, when I go to a local track with my buddies, I've got 4 or 5 that I go with on a regular basis, I feel like I spend more time worrying about keeping the bike off the ground than I do just enjoying the weekend. I'm 42 years old. Have I lost my edge? Is it time for me to spend some more time to get more confident, or do I back it down where I'm comfortable?
Man, that's a good question, especially coming off of what we were just talking about with the bike setup and stuff like that. And it's granted, I'm 26 years old, so officially just kind of really entered the vet world, if you will. But
you're on the accelerated program though, because you've been taking racing seriously for a while.
Headed there in a hurry, yeah. And so to me, Even already, I feel that, right? I mean, I grew up racing almost every single weekend and riding during the week at least once. Very fortunate to be able to do it so often. And then particularly for me, when I went off to college was when I really started to catch these 3 to sometimes 5 month breaks where I'm not on a motorcycle. And when you get back on it, all of a sudden, you know, stuff starts happening really quick, right? Yeah, exactly. And there is an element of like, man, this is a little more than I thought it was. I was doing a little more than I'm used to. And so to me, I think it's all about staying comfortable and staying safe where you feel in control. You know, Jack, I don't know what the program is. Maybe you're a first form athlete, right? Maybe you got the stack over in the kitchen.
He might.
And if he's not, then he should be. But to me, you know, you don't have to be Arnold Schwarzenegger to be able to ride a motorcycle, right? You take a look at somebody like Marvin Musquin. All right. He's not, you know, picking up the biceps and the triceps, but cardio got to be up. I think the biggest thing that I have seen and that I have found out over the years of, you know, my father, perfect example, continuing to be able to ride. My dad works out almost every night. All right. I give the guy credit. You know, there for a while when I was younger, he was in the gym. He was doing the bench presses and the squats and stuff like that. Now, as time has gone on, you know, very strict push-ups and pull-ups and body weight squats and, you know, does time on the spin cycles. But he has said, and he attributes a lot of his longevity to consistently staying in good shape and trying to stay moving, right? It's not about, you know, lifting the most or running the fastest, but doing something consistently to keep your body in moving condition so that when you do go ride, you're not locking up almost immediately. You're not out of breath by the time you reach the track entrance. Like it all starts to come into play because when you do get out there, the adrenaline kicks in. You don't feel it until it's almost too late, right? You never really feel arm pump creeping in. All of a sudden, it's just there.
Can't hold
and
on.
So, exactly. And so for somebody like Jack, that would be my suggestion is go back to the drawing board. We'll worry about the bike. Bike's simple, right? Get race tech. Get this. Get that. It's products, right? The man that controls the machine, a little bit more complicated. So go back, Jack, you know, he may have washboard abs and be absolutely shredded. And I hope he is. All right. But to me, you know, take care of the rider. Make sure the rider's comfortable. Don't be ashamed of protective gear, man. I'm a chest protector guy. All right. I got no shame in it. Knee braces. Maybe you're a neck brace guy. We won't touch on that. But, nonetheless, make sure the rider's taken care of. And I think that translates into confidence on the bike. Now, Brad, you could probably talk about this a little bit more as far as the pushing the limit on the track, especially if you're just trying to have fun. Where do you draw that line at, right? You got to go to work on Monday, but you don't want to get your ass kicked by your buddy on Sunday. Where's that line at?
Yeah, no, and this is the next thing that I was going to touch on. Thank you for bringing it to me, is the fact that, like, for me, I'm in a sort of a similar scenario, like, obviously, and to you as well. I don't ride 2-3 times a week like I used to, and when I do go ride, like, it's more knocking rust off. And by the end of the day, the last 2 rides of the day, I'm feeling pretty comfortable.
Track's beat up by then too. Yeah.
Yeah. I guess the real question is, like, how important to you is it that, like, you're faster than your buddies, or that, like, a guy that you used to, basically match each other for lap times, that guy's a little quicker than you now. Like, is having that same pace, like, is that, if you're not able to do that, is that going to bother you enough that, like, you're not going to go as often or something along those lines? And then maybe it requires a little bit more time on the bike, maybe away from your buddies, so that you're actually, like, maybe a little bit more in mid-season form. Maybe it requires more preparation as far as, like, yeah, fitness and actually doing a proper warm-up. Like, a lot of guys, they just sort of, like, roll their bike off the back of the truck, gas her up, put their stuff on, and start riding. Like, honestly, like,
such a good point.
Like, I don't want to look funny doing a warm up or like doing some calisthenics or something like that. But, like, I'd rather look funny getting myself ready to ride a dirt bike than, like,
pull a muscle because I didn't. Yeah,
either injured or yeah, prepare yourself. But at the same time, like, you have to have this honest conversation that, like, hey, am I here to go fast or am I here to ride my motorcycle? Right. Like, I like get like if say. My all out lap time right now is a 2-minute flat. Is running a 205 and taking a little bit off my fastball and, like, kind of just being a little bit more calculated coming into corners and not really pushing myself. Like, if I ride within my limits, well within my limits, am I still having fun? And if the answer is yes, then go for it, man. Like most of the time, especially if you're just weekend worrying it, like going to practice days and not really lining up for a lot of motos, we always think that people are, like, watching us out on the track. They're probably not.
Right.
And, yeah, like, if you happen to lose it at 42, or you've lost a little bit of that speed demon that you once were, I don't think there's anybody that is going to, like, kind of give you that much of a hard time, or at least a sincere hard time, about being a couple seconds a lap slower at 42 than you were at 22 or 32. But yeah, that's just sort of my take. I think that going about it the right way of just being honest about with yourself of what your expectations are, and then following through on that. Like, if it's bugging you and you said, yeah, I need to get back to where I'm at, then yeah, maybe you need to carve the time aside and get to back as close to where you once were, with the safest way possible. Go get yourself some gold valves. Go get yourself a kidney belt if that's going to be the difference.
Oh yeah,
keeping yourself safe out there. And go out there and enjoy yourself. I think that's the bottom line.
Without a doubt. Yeah. Good question there, Jack, too. I think, we talk a lot about the pros here, but I mean, you think about the vast majority of riders. I mean, even at GNCC, we have a platinum class that's 70 plus years old.
Jesus.
For riders that go out there. And I mean, you'd be amazed. We got 3 to 4 of them that are at every single round. So, I think, yeah, like you said, whatever.
Racing Roger DeCosta.
Yeah. No kidding. Right. Yeah. And so it's pretty impressive to see the longevity. It is possible. And I think, like we have said, anything that keeps you on a bike having fun, that's the way to go. So good question there from Jack. Next on the list, we've got Dean Lethbridge from London, England. Let me say that right. We've got Dean Lethbridge from London, England.
That's probably more like it.
That's a little more like it. All right. All right. So Dean's saying RJ Hampshire has been in the 250 class the entirety of his career to date, aside from select rounds. Has there ever been a high-level pro who never really moves up to the premier class? Well, I feel like this is kind of a double-edged question because RJ's not done yet. So I can't say that he's not moving up to the 450 class. You know, names like Martin Davalos come to mind.
Yep.
Definitely was comfortable in the 250 class. Alex Martin, definitely very comfortable in the 250 class.
And his brother, for that matter. Completely agree. Same scenario. I think when their careers are done, Alex will actually have more races on a 450 than Jeremy will.
Yep. I do think that there has been some change in the way the 250 class is paid and the way the 250 class is even looked at, I think, here within, I would even say, the last 5 to 10 years. So I don't think it's surprising to see a little bit older riders in the 250 class. I know Max Anstey gets some smack talk about him, but he actually made a good point saying that he's got essentially the same amount of supercross time as a lot of the younger people in the 250 class. But then you have people like Deegan, who's made it very clear he is trying to move on to the 450 as quickly as possible. And so there's kind of split decisions. Some people still look at the 450 class as the premier, which it is, but at the same time, I mean, Christoph Porcel, another one. He did move up the 450s, but it just didn't translate over.
Rode one during the week, oddly enough.
Yeah,
apparently that was his go-to, is just to ride a 450 and do his whole thing, and then show up on a 250F and go faster than everybody else, at least in time qualifying. Couple of the names that come to mind: Steve Lamson. Like, although did point out of the 250s, he basically always went back down to the 125s for outdoors. Ended up getting himself a pair of national championships and a motocross nations championship for his efforts. Mike Brown, right? I don't think Mike Brown has more than like a dozen starts in the premier class, indoors or out. Although I will say his pro circuit 252 strokes looked sweet. The white plates on those pro circuit bikes always looked, badass. That's pretty much it. Rhino was a guy who like kind of always seemed to like bounce back down there. And even Grant Langston but each one of those guys, what I find most about this is it, like, each one of those guys has like a very specific scenario of how, like, why they stayed in the
team. Yeah. How it happened. And, yeah.
Or it's like coming close to titles and not quite getting there. Like each one of those guys has a little bit of a different story as to why they didn't move up. Like Mike Brown didn't end up becoming a champion until he had to go to Europe and like race over there for a couple of years and then come back. And because of that, he had sort of like renewed his eligibility. And same thing with Ryan Hughes. So those are a little bit outliers, and obviously RJ, had he been able to stay off the ground more often than he's been throughout his career, we're probably not even having this conversation. We're talking about a guy who's probably like a West Coast or an East Coast Supercross champion and like knocking down 7th through 9th places in Supercross races right now. So, I think it's completely like, depending on like what goes on throughout your career. I don't think anyone rolls into their career saying, I want to be a 250 guy and that's where I'm going to stay. That just somehow, it's just how it works.
Yeah, definitely. Another name I can think of very similar, Jordan Smith, same thing, you know,
been able to
stay off the ground. You know, I definitely think by now we'd see him on one, but I do think a lot of these guys see a point to prove and, you know, they have boxes that they want to check before they move on. So yeah, good question there, from Dean. Last but certainly not least, Jason Davies coming out of Boston, Massachusetts, up there by our boy JJ.
JJ.
Yeah, but he probably does sipping mugs with him right now. Anyway, he says, boys, you know, that's how he says it too. Hey boys, settle a debate for me. All right. I got a pair of Royal Blue. Oh, okay. I feel like I know where this is going. All right. We got a pair of Royal Blue Alpine Star Tech 10 motocross boots. My buddy.
Great boots. Great looking boots.
Mike. Great boots. Tech 10. Love them. Run them myself. My buddy says colored boots were a bad move. I can't wear them with all my sets of gear. Have I made a terrible mistake?
I'm going to
start
say
this
yes.
off for me, Brad. Okay. All right.
I'm going to come out here hot. I'm going to say yes. Because there's just certain gear sets that they're going to be a bit of an eyesore. Like you can't tell me that these aren't going to be like, that's all that people are looking at. You know what I mean? And like, it's a distraction. Like, I love your Tech 10s, Jason. I think you picked a great boot. I'm either a white boot guy or a black boot guy, more of a white boot guy. Like, I Jeremy McGrath, white boots, probably 99% of the races that he ever raced. Same thing with RC, aside from the weird 2005 season when he wore barracks. Do you remember those?
Those were the ones with the eyes, right?
Yes. Yeah. They were an Italian company that they made motocross boots for like 6 months and RC wore them.
Those were pretty cool. I always
they didn't look bad. Cool. He had a pair of black and yellow set that looked really nice with the, actually, I think with the gear that the jersey that's hanging up behind you. That's just my take. I think, I would not
well,
go
and
personally.
So
but
we've,
that's
we've
all,
entered,
that's
we've entered a new world too, where like boot customization is all of a sudden it essentially a extension of the gear. Now, growing up, I was always the same way. I would say that most of your weekend warrior, I've got one set of boots that's going to last me for a couple of years.
Yeah.
You know, those type of riders, it's hard to argue with black and white. Same thing for me. I had white Tech 10s for years and years. Now I do know I've been riding Kawasaki's for several years now, and I like the green red combo. I usually have a touch of red in my gear sets. So I have a set of Tech 10s as well. They're white on the top and in the front, but they have touches of red, gray, and black on the bottom. Specifically on the bottom side of the boot where it gets torn up and roughed up a little bit more over time. So for me personally, just had a brand new set of that, Moose Racing Agroid gear, got sent to me. Shout out my man, Kevin. So put some of that stuff on, was worried how it was going to line up, but the red touched up. Now there are some bands of red in that gear that I was wearing, but the black and gray, I still feel like rather neutral kind of colors. Basic can go with a whole lot. I've seen, this past weekend, Bryson Neal had a set of, they were white boots with like these touches of almost like rainbow. I guess rainbow would probably be the best way to say it, but it matched his gear. And it's like, there's no way you could wear that boot without any other set of gear. Like that is the gear made for those.
Like those are married together. So if that's your daily driver, I have to suggest against it. Like,
right.
This is going
and that's what
story.
I mean. If Jason is saying, I can't wear them with all my sets of gear, can you buy different gear? Like because let's just ask. Because if you can coordinate it, I think it looks phenomenal. Like, I think it looks great. I've got another set of Moose gear that is red, black, and gray. Dude, I got a white helmet too, kitted all the way through, right? Got the matching goggle strap. So, you know, you can use it to tastefully add a lot to your look, but not only can it conflict with your gear, depending on the graphics scheme that you're running and stuff like that. If you really go wild with some of the like highlighter color boots and stuff like that, I don't know.
I think
there's definitely a lot.
Like the only reason why I say that Jason's made a bit of a mistake here is now the look comes from the boot. Like it depends on the boot. And honestly, the Royal Blue, having it be one solid color, like that is not as bad as when, I thank my, the guys over at Alpine Star so much back in 2018 it was. I don't know if you remember, but they had a set of boots that were out. There was white, lime green, and pink.
Yep, I know exactly which ones you're talking about.
And it matched a set of gear. And I was like, I talked to the media rep, and he's like, "Yeah, I know. I'll send you a set of boots." And they show up, and those are the boots that didn't go with any of my shit. And I was like, well, these don't do. I hate to be that guy, but I was like,
that's what I mean. Like, what do you do at that point?
I couldn't make that happen. So.
It's definitely, some of those are a little more severe than others. I hate to say it, but I think the all red boots look better than the all blue boots. Like, I'll agree with that. I personally feel like the red, you can have multiple shades of red, and it doesn't look as bad. Whereas if you've got a set of gear with blue in it and it's not the exact same royal blue, it doesn't quite add up the same. So I'm not saying you made a mistake, man. You did a great choice. You picked a great boot. Maybe it's just time to order some fresh Moose Racing gear or something like that, man. To me, it sounds a little more financially and fiscally responsible to try to replace a set of gear than to try to replace a set of Tech 10s. So you do you, man.
Yeah,
maybe
those are like $800 now.
Yeah, they're definitely up there. So make sure maybe on the next set we go with a more standard black or white. But, hey, man, we did have a Supercross race. I guess we should probably talk about that as well.
Yeah, let's talk about it. Why not? Yeah, this is the Power Hour after all. 250's yeah. Kitchen. He made that thing a snoozer. 21
Chefing
seconds.
It up, man. I mean,
oh, he whipped up something special here. That was a beatdown.
That was, I think that's going to be one of those rides where we look back and be like, this is where Levi Kitchen turned it on. Like, dude, all of a sudden.
He beat the 250 West class like they owed him money.
Yes. Yes. Absolutely. It was, and I think that's dangerous. I think giving him the confidence to believe that he can do that on a regular basis is bad news. This guy is got skills. I think it's kind of taken him a little bit of time. Obviously, there were some comfort issues, but man, him and PC seem to be absolutely gelling. And
starts are there.
Yeah, the starts are there. The finish, you know, he's obviously able to take it all the way to the finish. So, yeah, very, very, very impressive ride from Jordan or from Levi. Dropping just underneath, though, tough news for Jordan Smith. I mean, man, I just a local Carolina boy, grew up not far from where I'm at currently. And it's tough to see, man. I mean, you know, just as well as I do, we kind of get a little bit of an inside look and get to see these guys as people as well as yeah. riders and gladiators, if you will. Yeah, there's humans, there's hearts, there's emotions. And man, for somebody that's just always been so kind and I think is good with the media and really a good representation of the sport, he just continues to have things not go his way. So Jordan, yeah, we'll see. I haven't heard a ton of official word as far as the status and anything like that, but it's just, just bummer.
It's
there.
It's
disappointing
Smith. Because like you can't really have nights like that, unfortunately, and still be like in the hunt to win this championship. Thankfully, yeah. he's like he'll roll away and be able to line up this weekend in St. Louis. So it's not as devastating as it could be. Like, I just imagine myself going through those ruts. Like, you yeah. have my, like, everyone would have my, like, initials in their Instagram bio now, like, thoughts and prayers, because I'm dead.
Yeah. RIP.
Yeah, like, it's like, I just, yeah, Jesus take the wheel, and it would be to the clouds for me. So that was bad. But, yeah, like, Jordan Smith, yeah, like you hate to see it for the guy. He's got lots of speed, very charismatic when he's kind of like in the mix. And now he sits, but he's still third in points, but it's quite the distance now. It's 21 points. So now you have a table set for two. It's RJ and it's Kitchen. And I think honestly, I like the way Kitchen's been riding right now. He's getting the starts. He's able to walk away from these guys. And I really don't see too many guys that are going to be like separating the two of them. Obviously it's racing. Things can just happen. 8 points is big rolling into, I believe there's three rounds to go.
Yeah. I think the key is the starts. If Kitchen has got this dialed in and this is going to start to be a regular thing, which, you know, whether you're a greats person or not, it's consistent. I would say more consistent now round to round as far as start technique and stuff like that. So if he has found something that is like, hey, this is what we've been missing. And now we've got starts dialed. Yeah, that's bad news for the rest yeah. of the field. RJ, I love
the
depth
of
guy
rides coming up this weekend. So
exactly. So much more start dependent.
Yeah.
And we've got the East Wests coming up as well later in the year. So
how have we not had one yet? I feel like it's like around 13 and we like somehow those guys haven't smooshed together yet.
Yeah, I definitely feel the same way. I feel like we should have had one by now, but nonetheless, it's going to be exciting. And I think the thing with it being later in the year is everybody's going to be focused on them and them only. It's not going to be like, hey, let me protect this. It's like, hey, we've only got a couple of rounds left after this. To hell with the other coast. I'm focused on my race, and I will take out the leader of the other coast if he's in my way. And so might be a good thing to watch. Might be fun from a fan perspective.
Might have that exact
mentality. I wasn't going to drop a name.
That might
but
be verbatim.
Yes.
So you're
and
in
so,
the camp. You just outed yourself.
Yeah, we'll wait to see. I honestly, I could see the other side going towards Hayden Deegan and saying, hey, I'm gonna end this right now because I don't want to have to deal with it. So who knows, man? But yeah, got to give huge props to Joe Shimoda, right? Has finally shown up.
How did he get a podium there? Like, I mean, a lot of guys went down, but like at one point he was like 11th.
Yeah, in a lot of ways, I'd rather be lucky than good. But, you know, you don't luck into being in that position, I feel like. And I think Shimoda is – he is improving. It's not, I think, at the speed that everybody would like. I still
he's
don't
finally
think he
passed,
is.
Anthony Bourdon, or yeah, for fifth in points.
Yeah, and that's what I mean. It's almost, you know, a little funny because it's like this is not the same guy that we saw, I feel like, previously. But
yeah,
hey, man, it's tough. These guys are, you know, they're cutting edges. They're trying to get accustomed to the bike. And, you know, he is, has switched over, but you would think by now they would have something figured out. So I don't know. I'm at this point. I know we've talked about it with Tomac, but you got to start to wonder where the focus is really for a lot of these guys. Is it just like, hey, man, this wasn't our year. This works. It's not perfect, but let's just get through this damn season and try to focus on kicking ass in outdoor nationals. Cause, Joe's got the speed. That's what I mean. Like we're sitting here talking like, maybe he's lost it all of a sudden, but he's got it. He knows what it takes. It's just a matter of being able to execute and being able to ride like he's capable of doing. So we'll see what happens with that. But, yeah, man, good stuff out of the 250s, the 450 class, more exciting than we've seen, right? It was definitely not the runaway lead show.
Sometimes in the same lap.
Absolutely. Yeah. So, and you've even got here race of the year question mark. Cause I mean,
in my opinion, it was
the other ones haven't been that exciting. I'll say it like that. I mean, the weather, not the factor that we thought it was going to be, which I think was great. Track, I think, came out fantastic.
It had its fingerprints out there though.
Yeah, it was definitely right. And I mean, I don't look at that as a bad thing, right? It did rain. We're in that area of the country where that's known to be a threat. So, yeah, I think, I tell you what, we've talked a lot about the mental games that Cooper Webb plays and his ability to get into his opponents' minds. And I don't want to say that he's scaring him or anything like that, but I feel like Cooper Webb specifically has got a little bit of Jet's head. Right. He's got a little piece of Jet's brain where if you notice, there's been multiple times where it's like when Jet catches him, he races him just a little bit differently. And everybody's always said like this Cooper Webb kid, you know, the start with him, the sig on the starting line, this kid's got a little bit of a, he's always got that chip on his shoulder. Right.
He's
thanks
born
a lot,
at
Adam Cincirillo. Yeah. Appreciate it. Like
the herbal essences.
Yeah. And now we can't get him to calm down. And so I don't know. I think Cooper is feeling feisty, feeling frosty. Obviously, you know, birch or oak or whatever, but the forearms, he's got to get those guys softened out. I love when Cooper Webb says something kind of funny on the podium, like whether it's whether he like drops an ass or a shit or something like that, or his latest
personal
comment.
Favorite.
Yeah, he gets that little grin right before he says it, where he knows like what he's about to
say. He like
say.
Looks into the camera.
Yes,
like
yes,
I'm looking directly at the production manager.
Yes, and that's what I mean. It's like, I know I probably shouldn't say that, but yes, you look at me, get close, listen to what I have to say. Yeah,
it works.
And so
it backs the B word, Bowers.
Exactly. So I thought it was cool. The Morningwood comment was funny. I think Will's Christian's reaction to it, also just being completely caught off guard, reminded me of my buddy Jackson Burrell, man, when Stu Baylor, you don't talk about dropping a couple during an interview. We got to get that guy a beep button because, it was. And everyone, Jackson's eyes just get bigger and bigger because, like, as an announcer and as a reporter, what do you do? Like, I'm not going to pull the mic away from you unless I hear it in my ears from the producer. But at the same time, come on, dude. Like, cut me a slack here. So it was cool. I'm very
excited
for
Like when Booker T dropped the N-bomb on WWF.
Dude, and that's what I mean. Like, some of those go down in history. I had I can't remember his name, but a New Jersey native at Loretta Lynn's just absolutely just fuck, clear as day. I mean, and then to make it worse, he says it and then he just goes and just pauses. So if you didn't hear it, you know something just happened and you look at the guy next to you, what did he say? And so, yeah, it's Stu's pretty good about just rolling with it, which he's normally pissed off if he's cussing in the interview, so he doesn't really care. But
John Gruden had one of those.
Yeah.
Like, he said shit during a broadcast. It's pretty good.
Yeah, there's
he's like,
some
get that
like,
shit out of here. I mean,
I didn't mean that. And so, the Coop Jet battle was going to be fun to watch. Jet trying to run it in there on Cooper. I don't really know what he was going for.
Prado's
on
still
that
17th
one.
In points.
Wow. Like, I didn't know that. Still at this point?
Yeah. Like, the guys behind him, I haven't been in every race, but like Chiz, Craig, and Freezy are the only guys who are like regular guys behind him, but still like, the fact that Dean Wilson is only 4 points, no, 1 point ahead of Jorge Prado, here in round 11, that is impressive. That just speaks volumes. Like, it's not like he got himself a heat race win, which is like, that's something that I'll never have.
Yeah, he's certified legit.
Like the world on fire, but like still, like those are some solid rides from Prado. I think he's got a really bright future for him when he joins Jason Anderson next year on the Kawasaki squad. What else do we want to talk about?
Man, I hate to say it, but you know, the points battles and stuff like that, there's not really
there's not
a whole lot to discuss. Like it's, you know, he didn't get a win, but
if you're Tomac, if you are racing outdoors, that is your focus right now, right? Like you're going back to Cortez and just like throwing on the outdoor stuff if you're racing.
I guess, yeah, I don't know. I haven't heard anything whether he is or isn't yet. And so to me it's like if you're not, then what the hell are you doing? Like, I mean, I don't know. It's, I want to see him out there. I want to see the beast in the outdoor nationals. I want to see, I want to see Chase comfortable. I want to see Jet out there, Coop fired up on the star. So we'll see. I mean, I hate to already be looking towards outdoor nationals because I hate to say it, but the guy kind of kicks ass in outdoor nationals too, if in case anybody forgot. So, yeah, it's
coming off a perfect season, by the way.
Yeah, we'll see, man. I don't know. I want round one to be a barn burner out there and get it kicked off on the right foot. But till then, man, we're in for a treat. We'll see whether or not he makes any big mistakes, Jet, that is, or whether or not that, you know, Coop's able to track him down. If there's one guy that I'd put my money on chasing towards the end of the season to be able to get it done, it's Coop. But man, if Jet stays like Jed is, then there's not really an opportunity to strike. So,
see, this is actually the part of the podcast that I found this is going to be kind of interesting. Is like the next thing I had on here is like if Jed dominates, and like we've seen guys dominate in the past. This isn't the first guy we've seen just like grab the sport by the balls and be like, "Yo, come with me." Is what do we talk about? Because you can't just come on here every week and be like, "Yep, you fucking waxed everybody again. Like nothing we can do about this." Which for the most part, yeah, there's nothing you can really do about it aside from improve yourself and improve your motorcycle. And one of the things that I've always noticed when we have a rider that sort of elevates himself over and above the capabilities of other racers, the focus goes back to the motorcycle.
Yep.
Like if you remember like specific years where someone dominated, the rest of the conversation surrounded, like say like when James Stewart jumped on that reverse engine Yamaha, like we heard more about like ripping that bike to shreds in that one season than you hear about like what's the new Cowie like, what's the KTM doing right now, or what's it not doing. Like I feel like a lot of those storylines sort of get taken away when there's a good battle for, because then it's coming down to the races themselves. When the racers aren't trading positions, now we have to start bringing in conversations. Obviously, just you have, like turn your attention to other things that you can even talk about. And I think that's when like we'll start to dig a little bit deeper into the machines themselves, or like, hey, maybe that team manager ain't cutting it. Like those types of conversations are just not had right now because we've had good racing.
Well, and it's also
they're starting to creep back in.
Yeah, when you think about the increase in media coverage, right? I mean,
right.
Everybody's got a cell phone. I mean, there's podcast galore. Like, yeah, it's going to be very interesting to see because it's, we got a little taste of it last year. By the end of it, I'm just like, what do you want me to say? Like the guy's kicking ass. So, yeah, it's, I don't know. I don't think it's going to happen. I'll be honest. I don't know who it's going to be. I don't know whether, obviously Jed ain't slowing down. So somebody's going to have to pick it up. But, yeah, I mean, there's a lot of talk about Danger Boy being the one. Yeah, we'll see, man. I mean, right now it's good racing. I do still think that he's got these flashes of innocence and rookiness to him where, you know, I mean, like that incident with Webb to me is poor judgment making. You know, there was no way you were going to move him out of the way. And he said in his interview, he thought he could hit Cooper harder if he had to. And I'm like, dude, you're
the quarter panel, he would have gone over the bars.
Yeah. He would have flipped over. So, I don't know. He's definitely still got some things to learn. The scary part is he learns pretty damn quick. And so.
Oh, yeah. What was crazy is how much he was able to eat those guys up.
Yes.
Like,
yes.
At one point, he was 6.8. Two laps later, it was like 2.2.
Gone. Like, yeah, it's just gone.
Like, in the one whoop section, and those were like barely whoops anymore because, like, I don't even know what you'd really call that. Actually, he was in the waves. He went from like being in the corner to like right up on Sexton's ass in like tenth of a second. You're like,
well, and it doesn't, he's not doing anything special either. Like, you look at it and you're like, what did he just do to make up all that time? Like,
yeah,
it just, I don't know. The guy finds these little opportunities and just stretches them out to make the most. And that's what I mean. It's not the one thing. It's the 12,000 that he's doing just perfectly here and there and there that makes it up, man. So yeah, really, really fun to watch. And I mean, we'll see as time goes on how finite we're able to diagnose what he does and what he doesn't do. And we're already starting to see his riding style affect the way the next generation looks at jumping through braking bumps and flowing around the track. So yeah, you're already starting to see the jet effect. It's in here. The jet stream, if you will. I'm claiming that right now. The jet stream.
Ooh,
so
the jet stream.
Thank you. But no, one thing left to do, man. Everybody's frustrated nowadays. Got something to talk about. It's making them mad. That is why we have the Vented Plate Let It Out vent session. Brad, I'm going to let you kick things off, man. What's pissing you off? What's upsetting you?
This is part of it's my fault, because I'm just going to turn the gun on myself here. But like the number of outside the industry sponsors that we should have that we don't have, I don't understand it. I really don't. We had Coors, we had other beer brands. We had Bud on Bud Light on McGrath Spike in 2002, and then rolled into 2003 as well. Although that didn't really end well, but that wasn't the sponsorship's fault. That was just the KTM, and Jeremy was probably a few too many years past his prime at the time. Either way, like, where is Camping World? Where is Cabela's? Where is all the other blue collar redneck brands that sort of like
Levi's and stuff?
Sure.
Like, that.
Where's Carhartt?
Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean? Like, there are huge brands that are purchased by the core group of our audience that are like the exposure for your dollar in the world of moto is like, it's night and day. And like, literally, like, you could go watch like any similar motorsport that does have a lot of outside sponsors, and like, there's your contact list. That is the companies who like they have invested dollars in motorsports. So like, I can't imagine that the ask or like this theater of the mind when you're calling up these companies, like, it's not that big of a fucking jump to like, hey, you sponsor dirt track racing. Basically, those people also like to watch dirt bikes. Would you like to capture their attention when they look at this stuff too? And that's something I just don't quite get it as far as why we haven't been able to be successful with that. That was today's my rant.
No, I think it's a great question. I think a lot of people thought the Joe Gibbs effort was going to be kind of that stepping stone. I mean, when you talk about outside sponsorship, at least me being here in Charlotte, my mind immediately goes to NASCAR. I mean, you take a look at these cars, and every week they've got, you know, a new head sponsor, and they've got thousands of different logos and stuff on their cars that all help make the team happen. And I don't know what the return is that they're looking for. You know, I don't know what it is that somebody besides an energy drink company is able to get out of it, because clearly for a company like Red Bull, as many things as they're involved in, and a company like Monster, there's got to be a reason that they're still around. They got to be seeing a benefit to it. And so for me, like we said, I mean, primarily a blue collar racing force, as far as if you were to line up all of motorcycle racers in general, whether it's motocross, off-road, I mean, probably a hell of a whole lot of blue jeans. Like you said, hell of a whole lot of Carhartts.
A lot of them are in the trades, or they own a business that's in the trades.
Exactly. And so it's like, I don't know whether it's they don't see the return on it, whether it's because, like we have said, a lot of us already have those brands. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's definitely something interesting. I mean, I would probably say the biggest to jump in head first, no pun intended, has been OnlyFans with Carnell. I mean, they must be seeing some kind of return, but haven't checked that one out yet. But
I
don't
Pulley.
Know.
Don't forget they have the star-studded athlete lineup of David Pulley as well.
That's true. I forgot about that.
I think they ended up having to drop, was it his dad used to race. What's the kid's
name? And that's what I mean. They had expanded efforts into multiple riders. I mean, you had the CBD companies, they came in, and then
the same
breath almost kind of came out. But there's these long-standing – And I mean, the Liqui Moly Beta team, they are sponsored by Fiji Water. at least in GNCC. Now, I don't know about the
Moto as Supreme well. Cruiser. Yeah.
Yeah. And so it's like, that's a cool that. One. Yeah. I don't either, but it, nothing else. It's cool. Like that's a different.
Yeah. Someone at Fiji is like thumbs up. So
somebody's stoked about it. And so. Yeah, it's definitely, I mean, I was very stoked when First Form, you know, started getting involved. That's a supplement company that I've heard of for a long time. And there's a ton of those type of companies. There's a ton of health and fitness companies, you know, Jack Link's beef jerky. You tell me we can't have, you know, Jack Link's Kawasaki.
If you pulled the entire pits at a supercross race, do you like beef jerky? How many of those people are hitting no?
Yeah.
1%. Yeah, and it's because they missed their finger. Like they went to hit yes and like their finger missed and they hit no.
Yeah. And that's what I mean. I don't understand, you know, as I'm drinking right now, Black Rifle Coffee Company, you know, saw them, they made a huge commitment with Travis Pastrana. And,
right.
I personally have kind of been surprised that we haven't seen more of the, you know, BRCC on the side of the helmets and having a little more of a pro presence, even into the higher level amateur side of things. But no, it's definitely a rant worth having and worth continuing to talk about because, you know, especially somebody as well as yourself who actually does some of this selling and tries to get these mm-hmm. other people involved in the sport. And then somebody like me where it's my job to not just sit there and go, Black Rifle Coffee Company has been serving the United States for the last however many years. You got to make it interesting, right? Way. Exactly. You got to make it give you a reason to want to go out there and do it. And we take a lot of pride in trying to do that, whether it's at the GNCCs or at World Mini or whoever. And so we are desperate to try to
promote. If you this is going to sound crazy, but say to a guy like it would have to be a privateer, or if you even did it for a team, say if it was Hep Suzuki, they got three guys, okay. 450 class, all three of them main event guys. If you made a deal with Anheuser-Busch,
got to mention them. They're in the industry.
Well, yeah, they have Twisted Tea, which that's the Sam Adams group, which is awesome. They have that. But you could literally come out with either graphics or gear that showcase one piece of their lineup because Anheuser-Busch is also, it's Budweiser, it's Bud Light. It's Michelob Ultra. There's a whole sort of umbrella of beers under that. You think you're getting away from I'm not going to support Bud Light. I'm going to drink Michelob.
Yeah.
Same piggy bank, asshole.
Yeah. Played yourself.
Yeah. you got them. seriously, how sick would it be to have a Michelob Ultra jersey or something like that? Or you just completely knock off the Marlboro logo Weebig did. But either way, I think that there's some stuff being left on the table. That's my rant. What's yours?
Man, we had an instance. I'm not going to drop any names over the weekend at GNCC.
You're going to know it by the only other incident being in them. So.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure they're avid listeners. They're also on the four-wheeled side of things. So even more the reason they're probably paying attention, but this is universal, you know, because this does go between four wheels, between two wheels, off-road racing, flat track racing, racing in general and competition. Mom and dad. Okay. I cannot talk about how appreciative I am for both what my mom and dad have done for allowing me to race, taking me, spending countless, amounts of money, my entire college education.
Lack of talent.
Exactly. Going to an effort that they knew was going absolutely fucking nowhere, but they continued nonetheless. Whenever I wanted to go ride, I was able to. I had good bikes, good gear, and I want to start that with a thank you to all moto parents. Now.
That being said, with all due respect, and I mean
whatever,
with all due respect.
Yeah, whatever is due is there. You cannot fight on behalf of your child. You cannot fight for your child in the sense of in their place. You've got to show some damn composure. I don't know any other way to say it. And especially as your child begins to get into more competitive classes and really, I mean, for me, I'm sorry, 12 to 13 years old, I don't need mommy
fist fighting over.
Screaming at other kids, other competitors. Then, of course, that kid's mom and then the officials and this, that, and the other thing. I mean, at GNCC, you got the micro races in the morning and then you got the pro races in the afternoon. You go from, Little League all the way to NBA in the span of one day. So all of those team managers are watching. All of those team personnel are watching.
Oh,
all
yeah. If I was a team manager and saw some like crazy mom just like pressing down somebody. They're watching for it.
You best believe they are watching for it. And for me, parents, don't ruin your kid's career before they even have the damn chance to have it. Because it is so frustrating as I have gotten to know these riders. And you know, 12, 13, 14 years old, these youth riders, they got personalities, man. I love chatting it up with them and talking with them and watching them grow as not only athletes, but as humans in general, right? You're boys growing into men and girls into women. And, you know, they're growing up around this atmosphere that's supposed to be a united family. And then all of a sudden, because you think you saw this kid go too far, or because this kid blocked past your kid and made contact a little too hard for what you liked, you're going to go, you're going to start MFing, you stupid, you know, the insults get ridiculous. And it turns into a all about me, the parent. I want to make a big deal out of this, blah, 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 blah. Kids sitting there, mom, please stop talking. Dad, please stop. Yeah. You're making this worse. And you shut up, Timmy.
You're embarrassing yourself. Yeah, and, you like snap on the kid, which makes zero sense.
Yes. Now the kid is pissed off. The other kid's pissed off. The other kid's parents are pissed off. The officials don't like you. They're never going to forget you. Best believe I know off the top of my head 10 families that are known for having issues. And so we know if there's ever conflict with those families, you're going to want to hold off on the podiums until you find out exactly what happened, because you get a reputation. And there are many a rider throughout history that never got that pro chance because mommy and daddy couldn't keep it in check. Or when they did, it got taken away because the results weren't good enough to justify the bullshit that came along with the ride.
No, exactly. If you bring drama, that shortens the leash as far as what people are willing to put up with.
Exactly.
And even to say, like, honestly, like, maybe this is like, shouldn't say this, but like when I was announcing, if I knew that there was a kid who's either is a problem or his parents are a problem, I'm not going out of my way to make sure that I mention every single one of little Johnny's sponsors and speaking really complimentary about people who I know at their core don't behave the way that I would deem to be a correct way to go about things or a respectful way to go about things. And I guess like that's not my place to do so, but like I'm the guy with the microphone, so go fuck yourself.
Exactly. Come take it out of my hands and do something. And that's a whole other thing. I've had parents come up and curse me out because their child broke a rule or because they broke a rule, and it's my job and obligation to announce it. Hey parents, last time I checked, I've only said it 1,000 times, taking notes from my man JJ. Don't cross the damn track. Okay. And if you do, mark my words, I am calling you out. I don't care whether you're a mom, whether you're a dad, whether you got a baby on your hip, all the more reason you shouldn't do it, or whether you're wearing a South of the Border employee shirt. I am going to call you out because that is my job to do so. Be mad at me all you want. Come up, curse me out in the tower. I'm a professional. I do this for a living. It is my job to do what I am told. All you're doing is looking like a fool. So I digress. I don't want to get any more heated about it.
Oh, you're getting revved up.
Yeah, man, it really does. It bothers me because it's not fair to the kid, right? He's putting in the work. She's putting in the work. They're doing the time. They're taking the risks. Okay, if the kid comes in and is freaking out, that's one thing. You got to defend your child. There is a line where it goes too far sometimes. But, man, it's your kid's job to make that line. And ultimately, don't ruin the opportunity for your kid that you're paying for. You're footing the bill, all with the hopes and dreams of making it. Don't take that away because you couldn't keep your temper in check. So that's it, man. We all need to hold hands, sing songs, kumbaya. And I think that's it for the Power Hour, baby.
That's it for another Power Hour. Thanks, everybody, for listening to this episode. We are starting to count down the days to Loretta Lynn's 2024, and I will be at Hurricane Mills, Tennessee, by hook or by crook, booking flights or whatever it happens to be. I will be there. You and I will probably be doing some podcasts, maybe some Grom reports right from your cabin. We will be sharing a single bed. And it'll be a lot of fun down there. I'm looking forward to it. And for that reason, we're going to go out with Zach Herons at the ranch.
Welcome to Best 42 in the land. All ages from kids up to grown men. Walk through the gates of the coal miner's daughter to make a point clearer than the creek water.
Who's the best? Who's it gonna be? In Hurricane Mills, Tennessee. Can you feel the adrenaline? Dirt flies hypnotized by the wind spin. Hear the crowd, everybody's whistling. Line on the bend. If you can put it all together three times, this 1 week of racing could change your life. Everybody knows this is where it all begins. Do what you gotta do for 20 plus 2 out at the ranch. And rowdy fans play the national anthem and everybody stands. Smell the smoke from the two strokes riding by. The 30-second card's on its side.
It's time to get
it. Can you feel the adrenaline? Dirt flies hypnotized by the wheel spin. Hear the crowd, everybody's whistling. Line on the field. If you can put it all together three times, this 1 week of racing could change your life. Everybody knows this is where it all begins.